from the heart of our nation's capital, here's Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Well, hello, everyone, and welcome to Washington Watch. Coming up on this Tuesday edition, could we soon see a political Armageddon in the U.S. Senate?
If Republicans continue to hijack the rules of the chamber to prevent action on something as critical as protecting our democracy, then the Senate will debate and consider changes to the rules on or before January 17th, Martin Luther King Jr. Day.
That was Democratic Senate Leader Chuck Schumer on the Senate floor this morning saying filibuster rules will be changed in the Senate if Republicans don't get in line with the efforts of Democrats to change election laws. We'll talk with Mississippi Senator Roger Wicker in just a moment. We discussed it briefly yesterday. The Biden administration will be defending two of their vaccine mandates before the Supreme Court on Friday. One of the mandates is on health care workers that work at facilities that receive Medicare or Medicaid funds, which most do. Indiana Attorney General Todd Rokita has been leading a coalition of state attorneys general who are trying to stop the mandates. He joins me as we look at how the Biden administration is likely to defend their mandates before the court. And speaking of mandates, a victory last night for 35 Navy SEALs facing being drummed out of the Navy for not being vaccinated. A Texas judge issued a temporary injunction against the vaccine mandates. We'll talk with Mike Berry of First Liberty Institute, which is representing the sailors. By the way, what conservative ever thought we could look to the courts as a backstop for constitutional governance? Well, thanks to the record number of constitutionalists appointed and confirmed to the bench under Donald Trump, we have a chance to preserve the republic. Of course, the left knows this, and so they are working hard to put activists back onto the courts. Just before Christmas, the Biden administration nominated Nancy Abudu, the director of strategic litigation for the infamous anti-Christian organization Southern Poverty Law Center. We'll talk with the ranking member of the Senate Judiciary Committee, Senator Chuck Grassley, later here on Washington Watch. Also, FRC's Mary Beth Waddell, Director of Federal Affairs, will give us an in-depth look into Abudu's judicial track record and philosophy. The website, TonyPerkins.com. Let me again invite you to join us in our two-year chronological journey through the Bible. It just started January the 1st. You can catch up with us, frc.org/Bible. Today's reading, Genesis chapter 6 through 9. And our verse for the day is found in Genesis chapter 6, verse 11. The earth also was corrupt before God, and the earth was filled with violence. That was at the time of Noah. It's interesting. Jesus warned his followers to be ready for his return. He said this, but as the days of Noah were, so also will be the coming of the Son of Man be. That's in Matthew chapter 24, verse 37. Yesterday, in a Dear Colleague letter, Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer announced that the Senate will debate and consider changes to Senate rules on or before January 17th, Martin Luther King Day. He says this is to protect free and fair elections. And what he meant by that, of course, is the Democrats' repeated attempts at a federal takeover of elections through legislation such as the John Lewis Voting Rights Advancement Act and the Freedom to Vote Act. With me now to talk about what the Democrats are trying to do and how the Republicans may stop them is Senator Roger Wicker of Mississippi, who serves on the Senate Committee on Rules and Administration. Senator, welcome back to the program.
Thank you, Tony. It looks like you've got a great show lined up, and I'm honored to be part of it.
Well, you're the leadoff on the show, so it's going to be a good show today. Let's talk about this threat by Chuck Schumer. It's one he's been making for over a year to change the filibuster rules, meaning that a simple majority can push anything through the Senate, which would make it very much like the House.
It was an astonishing letter. It really was Orwellian newspeak. To read Schumer's letter yesterday, you would think that he is trying to honor the founders of this country by making the Senate just like the House of Representatives, which, of course, as we know, is exactly the opposite of what the founders wanted to do. George Washington explained to Thomas Jefferson, the Senate is where legislation goes to cool, like you cool coffee off in the saucer. So it also is a total reversal on the part of Senator Schumer. He used to be one of the great defenders of the filibuster as a consensus building technique that we have that makes us unique. So it's just amazing what he's willing to do. I hope Senator Manchin and his statement today made it clear that this is designed to fail, but I know he and Senator Sinema will be under enormous pressure between now and the 17th of January. So we need to keep up the pressure and keep explaining why this would absolutely change the Senate and change our republic forever.
And what is driving this, I believe, and correct me if I'm wrong, Senator Wicker, it's their fear over the fact that the Americans are turning away from their radical agenda, and they're afraid they're going to lose elections because you have states, state after state, going back and fixing loopholes in election laws, making sure we have free and fair elections. And so the only way they see their ability to hold on to power is this far-reaching grab, power grab is the only way I can define it, over state elections.
No question about it. Listen, we need to make it easy to vote in the United States, and it is easy to vote. We need to, at the same time, make it hard to cheat. And that's why so many states have enacted photo ID, and those laws have been upheld by the Justice Department. Some of the things that Senator Schumer would repeal in this legislation have actually been ratified by the voters of his own state in the November election. That there was a proposal to sort of open up absentee voting more than it is now. The voters of New York, a very liberal state, voted that down. And yet this legislation that he's backing, that he would abolish the filibuster because of, would repeal the very decision that his own voters in New York made just a few weeks ago.
So the process, this basically can be done without any Republicans being a party to the change of the rules. Is that correct?
Right. Well, it's the nuclear option. And yes, what happens is Senator Schumer would appeal the decision to the chair, and 50 senators would vote to reverse it, and the vice president would come in and in that 50-50 Senate, changed longstanding rules that have actually served our nation well. You know, Tony, during the Trump administration, Republicans and Democrats alike signed a letter saying we need to keep the Senate as it is. We need to keep this consensus building aspect that makes us unique and makes us come together. 35 Democrats signed that letter. Now it seems that some 33 of them have had a change of heart now that Joe Biden is president. It's breathtaking the way they are contradicting what they said only a few short years ago.
And by the way, there were a few years ago, there were Republicans who wanted to change that, not necessarily in the Senate, but there were conservatives who wanted to see the rule change. I did not. I was very clear on the record. I did not want to see that filibuster rule change for this very reason.
I think history will vindicate you on that. Yes, the convenience of the hour sometimes makes us frustrated. But let me tell you, a lot of really great legislation has been passed with this consensus building mechanism we have. The original Voting Rights Act, the Civil Rights Act, Social Security, Medicare. They have all been done with 60 vote majorities because it took time to come together to develop something bipartisan and something that both the center, the right, and the left could come together on. And it's a wonderful technique. And I'm just astonished at the foresight of the founders for instituting this type of bicameralism. Oh. It would be a terrible, terrible thing to toss away.
I mean, the reality is we're a divided nation, and it's becoming more difficult to reach that consensus. I get that. I understand that. I was frustrated by some of the things that Donald Trump, during his presidency, was not able to do through the Senate because they didn't have 60 votes. I understand that. But that, as you've pointed out, that's what keeps this country together, because if not, it's going to be like a ping pong match. You're going to have a Democrats going to be in power, and they're going to hit the ball, and they're going to do what they want to do. Then the Republicans take over, and they do what they— there's no stability in that.
It would make us very much like some of our European socialist allies. And I'll tell you, if this succeeds this month, then the next thing you're going to see is Supreme Court packing with 51 votes.
Yeah.
You're going to see statehood for the District of Columbia with 51 votes. Every state that has a right to work law that says you don't have to join a union if you choose not to, that would be repealed at the sweep of a pen with a 50-50 vote majority and a tie break by the vice president. So there's a lot at stake. And I'm just hoping and praying that Senator Manchin and Senator Sinema will stick to their guns. We had a really strong statement, I think, from Senator Manchin today. It makes me hopeful that once again we can dodge the bullet on this.
You know what, Senator, I think you're absolutely right, because I think once you go down this path and you make an exception for voting rights, you're right. Right to work is on the table. Second Amendment protections is on the table. There's no limit to what the left will do, because they have so many special interest groups that'll be pounding at the door demanding that Joe Biden and Chuck Schumer take action.
Right. And Joe Manchin essentially said that today. He said, once you start slicing the turkey, you've essentially decided to slice up the whole turkey. It's a metaphor, perhaps. You wouldn't have chosen, but I know what he meant.
I'm not a turkey. I'll take the ham. but you actually pointed out, we just got a couple minutes left, but you pointed out in an op-ed that you wrote during the Christmas break, actually came out December 31st, kind of the priorities that Congress should be looking toward in this new year. And actually, you've listed some of these things that they would be coming after. For instance, defending election laws. That's what's at stake here. They want to do the very opposite of what you say the Congress should be doing.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And also, we need to get back to defending our country. You know, we voted on a bipartisan basis to give another $25 billion to the defense of this country. You have to up the Biden defense request by that amount of money. We're going to have to pass the appropriation bills to do that. Here it is. Now we're 3 months into the fiscal year. We still haven't appropriated money to defend the nation and to give our military members their the pay increase that they're entitled to. So, there are a lot of things that we need to do. And chief among them, protect the border, protect the voting laws, and make sure our defense has the capability that our admirals and generals tell us we need.
Senator Wicker, always great to talk with you. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Appreciate it, Tom.
All right, Senator Roger Wicker of Mississippi. All right, coming up, the Biden administration will be before the Supreme Court on Friday defending two of their mandates. We're going to be joined next by one of the attorney generals of the states, Attorney General Todd Ricotta of Indiana. Don't go away.
Are you struggling to spend consistent time in God's Word? Then join Family Research Council on an exciting journey through the Bible. FRC's two-year Bible reading plan helps you to approach daily Bible reading with an intentional focus of diving deeper into the nature of God and how His Word speaks into cultural issues. By studying the Bible, we can see the grandeur of God unfold throughout the past. The Stand on the Word reading plan takes you through daily scripture in an engaging manner to help you stay grounded in God's truth. All wisdom comes from God, and He has given us the Bible as a way to understand the world. Start this adventure today with Family Research Council. When you sign up, we'll text you every Sunday with daily passages and questions that help prepare you for conversations with your friends and family. To begin this journey, visit frc.org/Bible. With the current division and confusion of our culture, it is so important for Christians to root ourselves in the truth of God's Word so that we are prepared to give a reason for the hope that we have. For this purpose, Family Research Council launched the Center for Biblical Worldview. The center applies the Bible and the historical teachings of the church to current issues. This helps Christians understand and live by a biblical worldview, know why Scripture must be authoritative, and equips believers to advance and defend the faith in workplaces, schools, communities, and the public square. The experts at the center address and provide resources on issues like religious liberty, abortion, voting, marriage, and sexuality. To access free resources like the Biblical Worldview series, go to frc.org/worldview. To get highlights of the latest work of the Worldview Fellows, including blogs, interviews, and publications, sign up at frc.org/subscriptions.
At Family Research Council, it is important to us that we stay connected with you and that you stay informed. With the increase in text censorship of conservatives and Christians, we've decided to be proactive to make sure we don't go completely dark due to censorship. That is why we've created a text subscription platform. If we get canceled, you can stay informed and still find updates on faith, family, and freedom. How? Just text STAND to 67742 to sign up for our text alerts, and you will get FRC's content straight to your phone. Again, just text STAND to 67742, and you will get special alerts on the biggest stories of the day. You can stay informed with just a simple text. We want you to be able to stay connected with like-minded community and to always have access to our content. Stay connected and informed. Just text STAND to 67742.
This is Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. The website, TonyPerkins.com. All right, with America seeing a record number of cases of this latest variant of COVID, the hospital worker shortage in many parts of the country is becoming more severe. And the growing concern over the shortages is leading some hospitals to tell their employees that they can work even if they have tested positive for COVID amid a staffing crisis. Well, given the latest COVID surge and the fact that the Omicron variant can spread to both the vaccinated and unvaccinated, how might the Biden administration defend its case for forcing federally funded healthcare facilities to fire unvaccinated workers when the Supreme Court hears the oral arguments on this mandate coming up this Friday? With me now to talk about this is one of the several state attorneys general who are defending healthcare workers in the court, Indiana Attorney General Todd Rokita. General, welcome back to the program.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Tony. Happy New Year.
Thank you. Happy New Year to you as well. And I hope it's off with a bang when you go to the court on Friday. I hope and pray you're successful. In the filings of the Biden administration, they're now saying, well, this isn't a mandate. We're not mandating this. Is that going to hold up before the court?
I don't see how it can. We'll be prepared for court on Friday. You know, myself and my staff and other like-minded attorneys general and their staffs. And no, we don't see how this is anything but a mandate. When you say to a healthcare provider, employer, like, we're going to hold your Medicare and Medicaid funding unless your employees are vaccinated, that's like sticking a gun to a hospital or any healthcare provider's head. Because, and this is a whole separate segment of your show sometime, Tony, I mean, they're so beholden to federal dollars. And so the Biden administration knows this, and they're using this latest variant and some of the numbers, whether they're true or not, to tell the court, hey, we need a decision sooner rather than later. And to that I say, so be it. So we get a decision sooner rather than later. We're prepared to uphold the individual rights of healthcare workers to decide for themselves with their doctors what's best for them while they responsibly take care of patients.
Yeah, there's two cases before the court. You're focused on the one dealing with the healthcare workers. I would think that would be the It would be a slam dunk in my view, because one of the arguments that the Biden administration is using to force these mandates is they want to keep Americans healthy, safe. They want to keep them from dying. Well, how do you do that when you're forcing healthcare workers out of business? You're firing them because they won't submit to your vaccine mandate. I mean, that's actually making our healthcare system, putting it into a crisis.
Absolutely, especially during this time. We need all hands on deck. You know, a year ago, we were heralding our healthcare workers as heroes, and they still need to be upheld in that vein. And how do you tell a hero that you're not responsible enough or you don't know enough to make your own healthcare decisions? You know, it's ridiculous. The fact of the matter is that, decision to vaccinate or not shouldn't be government's at all. It should be between you, your doctor, and God himself. You know, that should be where your decision points, the decision point lies, not in the federal government.
General, just so people have an understand, a kind of a reference point, you know, they talk about Medicare, Medicaid facilities. They want, you know, I'm not on Medicare. I don't get Medicaid. It's not going to affect me. But that's not true. This is far reaching in the implications this has for doctors' offices, hospitals, will be impacted by this.
Yeah, yeah, and that goes right back to, Tony, what I was saying earlier, where, you know, maybe it's a whole separate discussion. Sometimes it should be. These healthcare providers, these hospitals, these doctors' offices, these clinics, everyone really in the system, even though I maintain we have the best system in the world, it's certainly far, far from perfect. And one of the reasons it's far, far from perfect is because there's so much bureaucracy and federal dollars put into the system. So when you come out as the Biden administration and say, you know what, if you take federal dollars, right, if you take Medicaid or Medicare money, and you're a healthcare provider, and you don't have all your employees vaccinated, you're going to lose those federal dollars. You will immediately and very negatively impact the business model, if you will, the ability for these hospitals to even stay open if they don't get these federal dollars. Right. And that's the last thing you want right now.
Right. But it's also doctor's offices that take patients who are Medicare or Medicaid patients. Yeah. And they could lose their doctors because if a doctor says, I'm not going to do this, well, then that patient has to go someplace else.
Yeah. So what I just said, you know, is the decision to get vaccinated between you and your doctor. Well, you know, if this keeps going like this, you won't have anybody but Joe Biden to go to for advice, right? if you should get a shot or anything else.
Yeah. And I hope I don't get sick. Look, you made references about the numbers, and you were recently criticized by your governor, actually, saying that you don't believe the numbers anymore. And frankly, let me just say, disclaimer, I'm with you. But what? How do you defend that against those that say, how do you claim you don't believe the numbers?
Well, it's quite simple. I mean, look how many times they've been revised all over the place after they've been put out. And you know, it's not even about my state Department of Health. I'm assuming that they simply get numbers from healthcare providers. I'm assuming they can add them up correctly, and I'm assuming they can pass them on to the CDC. But it's, you know, it's that old data provision where they say garbage in, garbage out. And if you don't know, if there's no standardized criteria for how these numbers are created in the first place by healthcare providers, you can't hope to aggregate these numbers and report them on a national basis correctly and accurately. It's just, and there is not, there's not a nationalized or standardized criteria for determining whether someone died of COVID or whether someone died with COVID.
Right.
Really killed or injured or whatever by something else, some intervening cause. Right. And so this is common sense. You don't need me as an attorney general to tell you this. This is just
we need somebody to tell those folks that are counting to use common sense, because somebody's not. General Rakita, always great to talk with you. Best to you on Friday as you defend those healthcare workers.
Thank you, sir, very much. We'll get the job done.
All right. Attorney General of Indiana, Todd Rakita. All right. Coming up next, some Navy SEALs. Good news for them. Don't go away.
What is religious liberty and why should you care about it? Simply put, religious liberty is the freedom to choose your religious beliefs and to live according to those beliefs. Why should we care about this freedom? At Family Research Council, we care about religious freedom because we believe that it is an inherent human right that all governments have an obligation to protect. Tragically, not all governments do. Religious persecution is a tragic reality around the world that is not often acknowledged by the media, even though attacks on people of all faiths continue to increase globally. In Scripture, God calls Christians to pray and care for the persecuted church, the downtrodden, and those who cannot help themselves. Therefore, we must be advocates for those persecuted for their faith. To access Family Research Council's latest resources and to learn more about religious freedom and what you can do to help the persecuted, go to frc.org/religious liberty.
Do you want to be able to stay up to date on conservative news? Are you looking for Christian resources to help you stay politically engaged? Then download Family Research Council's Stand Firm app. With all of our content available at your fingertips, you will conveniently be able to stay up to date throughout your busy day. The Stand Firm app will give you access to a variety of resources, such as our most recent episodes of Washington Watch with Tony Perkins, tweets and other social media posts, and our latest blogs, updates, and publications. Additionally, you will have the opportunity to take action and make your voice heard by contacting your elected officials on the issues that most concern you. Visit the App Store on your smartphone or mobile device and search Stand Firm to download Family Research Council's official Stand Firm app.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins, your host, and the website is tonyperkins.com. All right, yesterday, a federal judge issued a preliminary injunction barring U.S. Department of Defense from punishing a group of Navy service members who have religious objections to the Pentagon's vaccine mandate. In the court order, Judge Reed O'Connor of the U.S. District Court for the Northern District of Texas pointed out that the Navy's religious accommodation process is, quote, by all accounts, theater, end quote, noting that the Navy has not granted a single religious exemption to any vaccine in recent memory. Joining me now to talk about this victory from the courts over the vaccine mandate is Mike Berry, General Counsel for First Liberty Institute, whose legal group is representing the Navy sailors. Mike, welcome back to the program.
Hey, Tony, it's great to be back with you.
Congratulations. I know it's a temporary injunction, but it is a significant one.
It is significant. You know, this is the first major victory, at least on behalf of service members against the vaccine mandate. I think this is going to send a clear message around the nation that there is a way to challenge the vaccine mandate, especially for people of faith. So our hope is that even though this injunction applies only to our clients right now, this is a blueprint for how to proceed with other lawsuits or other challenges to the vaccine mandate, again, by people of faith serving in uniform and perhaps even beyond.
So kind of walk us through the process. I mean, this is temporary. It'll be litigated. It would go to the Fifth Circuit, if I'm not mistaken, if it's appealed.
Yeah, that's correct. You know, the ball is squarely in the Navy's court. They have to decide whether they're going to appeal this or not. If they do decide to appeal, it'll go to the Fifth Circuit. But I think Judge O'Connor's ruling is you know, pretty comprehensive and thorough. It's a 26-page preliminary injunction decision, and it lays out really all the arguments necessary to show that exactly as you highlighted at the beginning, Tony, that everything that the Navy has done and really the Department of Defense has done so far has been theater. It doesn't matter what kind of window dressing you put on the process. If we know, and we all know, that this is a predetermined outcome, that every single religious accommodation request submitted was going to be denied before it was even submitted, then it's really a sham process. And that's no way to run a country or to run a military.
Now, I mentioned these were 35 sailors. These are Navy SEALs. These are kind of the elite fighters there in the Navy, which you and I as Marines have a great appreciation for. Any other highlights in the judge's ruling that are significant?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, and you know, first of all, the decision is available at firstliberty.org for anybody who wants to read it. It's a very powerful decision. And like I said, it goes through and explains in detail exactly why what the Navy and what the DOD is doing is wrong and violates the Constitution and violates the Religious Freedom Restoration Act. And I think one of the most important pieces of it, Tony, is when the ruling says that the DOD vaccine mandate, when there is no provision for religious accommodations, that violates the Religious Freedom Restoration Act and it violates the First Amendment, and the government does not have a compelling interest. There is no compelling interest in forcing people to violate their conscience and violate their religious freedom and get a vaccine that they have a religious objection to. The government is not able to carry its burden of showing that it has a compelling interest. For months now, we've heard the Pentagon say over and over again that, oh, well, we have to have everybody vaccinated. This is a matter of national security, so on and so forth. Well, this ruling severely undercuts that argument and says, if it's really such a matter of national security, you wouldn't be kicking people out. You would want every available person in the fight. And that's exactly what these Navy SEALs should be doing. They should be fighting for our freedom, fighting to defend our nation and our interests. Instead, they're fighting for their careers.
You know, I know you're a lawyer, not a doctor, but doesn't the fact that the Omicron variant, the fact that it can spread to vaccinated and unvaccinated, make an even stronger case for how unnecessary these vaccine mandates are for young, healthy individuals such as those in our military?
Yeah, it's interesting that you bring that up. The Department of Defense continues to create a moving target for why people have to get vaccinated, why service members have to get vaccinated. You know, in the early days, we were told it's to prevent infection and prevent transmission. Well, now, of course, we just as you said, we now know that the fully vaccinated and fully boosted can also both contract and transmit the virus. So that's no longer their argument. Now they're saying, well, we need it in order to prevent serious injury or death, right? And so it continues to be a moving target. They continue to allow medical and administrative exemptions, and at least until yesterday's ruling, they were not granting any religious exemptions. So to me, I mean, the word theater is really a great way to describe exactly what it is. It's all political theater. I'm not afraid to say that. I think this is all a political agenda that's being foisted upon our service members. I think that's a terrible thing for America. It's a terrible thing for freedom. It really harms our national security, and it causes the American people to lose trust and confidence in the Department of Defense and its ability to carry out its mission. When you start to believe that your military is nothing more than a mercenary force of people who are just going to receive a paycheck and do whatever they're told, that's not freedom. That's not America. Right. That's what you might expect to see in North Korea or China, but not here.
Yeah, that is scary. Mike Berry, as always, great to talk with you. And again, congratulations for a job well done to you and to First Liberty Institute.
Thanks, Tony. It was a great day for religious freedom, for sure.
All right, we're going to continue to track it. And folks, I hope you'll stick with us on that. Coming up next, we're going to talk about some of Joe Biden's nominations to the court. They're on the other side of the spectrum. Liberal, very liberal. Actually, they're leftist.
Do you want to be able to stay up to date on conservative news? Are you looking for Christian resources to help you stay politically engaged? Then download Family Research Council's Stand Firm app. With all of our content available at your fingertips, you will conveniently be able to stay up to date throughout your busy day. The Stand Firm app will give you access to a variety of resources, such as our most recent episodes of Washington Watch with Tony Perkins, tweets and other social media posts, and our latest blogs, updates, and publications. Additionally, you will have the opportunity to take action and make your voice heard by contacting your elected officials on the issues that most concern you. Visit the App Store on your smartphone or mobile device and search Stand Firm to download Family Research Council's official Stand Firm app.
What is religious liberty and why should you care about it? Simply put, religious liberty is the freedom to choose your religious beliefs and to live according to those beliefs. Why should we care about this freedom? At Family Research Council, we care about religious freedom because we believe that it is an inherent human right that all governments have an obligation to protect. Tragically, not all governments do. Religious persecution is a tragic reality around the world that is not often acknowledged by the media, even though attacks on people of all faiths continue to increase globally. In Scripture, God calls Christians to pray and care for the persecuted church, the downtrodden, and those who cannot help themselves. Therefore, we must be advocates for those persecuted for their faith. To access Family Research Council's latest resources and to learn more about religious freedom and what you can do to help the persecuted, go to frc.org/religious liberty.
Attention university students. Are you looking for an internship that will help you grow as a Christian leader and allow you to positively influence the culture? Then Family Research Council's internship program is for you. FRC's life-changing 12 to 15-week internship program will prepare and equip you for the next step in your professional journey. You'll enjoy a speaker series focusing on careers and callings, lectures from prominent conservative leaders, and weekly biblical worldview training. All of these offerings were created to aid you in your personal and professional development. As an intern, you will have the opportunity to work side by side with our experts in policy, communications, event planning, and more. The real-world experience you gain will prepare you to pursue a career of influence and make a difference wherever God calls you. This paid internship offers fully funded housing in the heart of downtown DC, giving you the chance to experience our nation's capital. Visit frc.org/internships to apply.
All right, welcome back. This is Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins, your host. Just before the Christmas break, President Joe Biden nominated to the 11th Circuit Court of Appeals a political activist, Nancy Abudu, who works as the director for strategic litigation at the anti-Christian Southern Poverty Law Center. Now, in response, Family Research Council and a coalition of more than 50 individuals and organizations sent a letter yesterday to the chairman and ranking member of the Senate Judiciary Committee in opposition to the nominee. Here with me now to give us the latest on this nomination is Senator Chuck Grassley of Iowa, who is the ranking member of the Senate Judiciary Committee. Senator, welcome back to the program.
Glad to be with you, Tony. Thank you very much. And you said the word Southern Poverty Law Center. You know, you probably know that that organization said you were head of a terrorist organization, which maybe speaks to the point about why somebody like Nancy Abudu should not be on the 11th Circuit Court.
You're absolutely right. They have made a history of targeting conservatives and more of a pit bull for the left than they are a arbiter of who is in bounds or who can play and who cannot in the political arena. And the fact that she worked or works for them clearly shows that she has an agenda. She's an advocate. Is this the type of individuals we need on the court? Can we trust them to be fair in their decisions?
I would think that we would want, and I want, on the court, a person who is going to interpret law the way Congress intended it to be written, and the Constitution according to original intent. In other words, what the Constitution writers intended in the Constitution. That's the narrow boundaries with what a judge should do. But when somebody like Nancy Abudu gets on the court, you kind of figure they have an agenda. And we can't ever get this information out of them, but what is their judicial philosophy? They don't want to tell us. You know, we're kind of interested, are they strict constructionists or do they believe in what we call an evolving constitution? And if they're for the latter, then that gives a chance for them to put their personal views into making a decision. And that isn't what we should be doing. Courts are supposed to interpret law according to what Congress intended when we pass it, not put their own personal views into it. And the same way with the Constitution, according to the originators of the Constitution. If you want to change the Constitution, you don't have Supreme Court judges change it. You amend the Constitution.
Well, I think we're seeing a trend here. More than 92% of Joe Biden's court picks got a no vote from more than 25% of senators. Now, that compares to only 18.2% of the same at the same point in former President Obama's tenure. Now, this is according to the Heritage Foundation's Judicial Appointments Tracker. Are we seeing more radical extremists being nominated under the Biden administration than we did Obama?
Well, that's what we think, and that's why most Republicans have opposed most of these nominees. And I suppose it's going to be a few years down the road until we know for sure. But when you can't get them to tell you what their judicial philosophy is, whether they're for an emerging constitution, an evolving constitution or not, you really don't know. When you get done with 5 minutes of questioning, or if you want to go a second round, 10 minutes of questioning. But you can't seem to get much more information out of them. Another issue here, though, isn't just the issue you brought up. With not only Nancy Abudu, but with a lot of other judges that this president has nominated, you find that they come from a very narrow area of the law, either a criminal defense or liberal advocacy, and I guess you'd put Nancy in this latter category, and as opposed to you want a judge. There's nothing wrong with being a defense attorney. I wouldn't say that, or even if you're a liberal advocate. But if that's as narrow as you've had experience in the law before you go on the courts, I think we ought to have a broader background than just that for people getting a lifetime appointment.
Absolutely. And the reason this one is drawing more attention than most, I mean, you've got three levels. You've got district court levels, which oftentimes are just, those are just kind of pushed through. Nobody pays a whole lot of attention to a district court judge. I mean, relatively speaking. You get to the appellate court. Obviously, that's more significant because there is where court cases get bumped up to the highest court, which is the Supreme Court. Now, Nancy Abudu, she is an appellate court. This is one I would think that the Republicans should be paying very close attention to.
Well, not only with Nancy Abudu, but we've ran into this with almost every nominee to a circuit court. And that's why most Republicans have opposed most of these nominees, particularly the circuit court. And in fact, this level of judiciary is so great that out of 2,000 cases that the Supreme Court is asked to take, they generally only make decisions on 70 to 80 in the course of a year. So that may be, 1 or 2% of all the cases they're asked to take. So in the other 98% of the cases, the Circuit Court of Appeals is the final determinant of what the law is or what the Constitution is.
Yeah, and I don't think people realize the difference in those, and that's why these, I think, deserve greater scrutiny. So let me ask you, Senator Grassley, what's the line for you when you are looking at these judicial nominees, when you say, I can't vote for this one? What's that line for you?
I think I've probably said this 3 times now, but not in the same context of your question. I'm looking for somebody that's going to interpret the Constitution according to original intent. I'm looking for somebody that's going to determine the constitutionality of statute according to the intent of the legislative body that wrote it. I want them to leave their own personal views out. In addition, in a more general way, I would say you want somebody that's got good, broad legal background, not necessarily having to graduate from Harvard or Yale, although that's where most of the Supreme Court nominees have come from. But the point is that you want people to have strong knowledge of the law. But the most important thing is what we call judicial temperament, which is to leave their own personal views out of it, out of any decision they make.
To me, that sounds exactly what the Senate should be doing when they look at a judicial nominee, is that, number one, the Constitution is at the top, because that's the agreement by which we all agree to be governed. And if they will not abide by the Constitution, or if they see it as this living, breathing document that can change at any moment, to me, that spells trouble.
I think that Democrats feel that judges ought to be politicians, and the only difference is they got a robot.
And they get lifetime appointments.
And lifetime appointments, yes. They don't have to stand for election like those of us in the United States Senate or House of Representatives.
That's right. Senator, always great to talk with you. We're going to be tracking this one very, very closely, because I think this is a dangerous nomination.
It is. And, you know, I want to thank your organization, the Family Research Council, because you helped me so much in 2015 and 16 when we were holding up the nomination of Judge Garland. I was chairman of the committee at that time, and you helped us fight that battle. I got through a very tough re-election at that particular time, but we were able to get Gorsuch, a constitutional conservative, on the Supreme Court as a result of your support of our efforts to not move ahead with Judge Garland that Obama thought should be on the Supreme Court.
Always glad to help to defend the Constitution and preserve the Republic.
Yeah, thank you very much.
All right, Senator, good to talk with you. Have a great day. Senator Chuck Grassley of Iowa, ranking member on the Senate Judiciary Committee. All right, joining me now to dive further into the radical activism that marks Nancy Abudu is our own Mary Beth Waddell, Director of Federal Affairs for the Family Research Council here with me. I think, there you are. Mary Beth, welcome back.
Glad to be here, Tony. Thanks for having me.
All right. You heard my conversation with Senator Grassley. He obviously is concerned about it. This is a more significant nomination because it is not a district level judge, although I would say those are important too. This is an appellate level, as he pointed out. These are ones who, quite frankly, their decisions sometimes stand when the Supreme Court does not take up a case. So let's go a little bit into to her background, mentioning that she works with the Southern Poverty Law Center, which is an anti-Christian organization that has attacked us and other Christian organizations. What has been her role there?
She is the strategic legislative or legal director, and most of her work has been in the place of voting rights. She's a big proponent of preclearance, which is this idea that has been deemed unconstitutional by the Supreme Court, which would be interesting to see her on a court, given that she supports this idea. And this idea of preclearance would require certain states to get approval from the Department of Justice before they can change their election laws. You know, we just saw this in Georgia with the law that they passed for election integrity. And she's made all of these various comments about things that she deems as voter intimidation and voter suppression, such as making sure that you're a citizen of the United States, making sure that you are who you say you are. And these should be ideas that we all should support. We should understand that our elections are so important that we should make sure only legal voters are voting, and that they're only voting once, so that we have election integrity in this country. And that's been the majority of what she has been doing at the Southern Poverty Law Center.
You know, what is really, I'd say, interesting about the Southern Poverty Law Center is that you just described here, they have policy positions. They advocate for policy. And that's fine. I mean, that's how our system works. You have people who advocate for, you know, leftist policies, which they do. You have organizations like ours that advocate for constitutional-based conservative policies, and so that's how the system works. But the difference here with the Southern Poverty Law Center is that they not only want to be an advocate for policy, but they want to demonize their opponents in labeling them hate groups, terrorist organizations. So how can you do both? I mean, they've even gone after Ben Carson. They attacked Ben Carson. So there's no limit to the number of conservatives that they've attacked.
Absolutely, there's not. They have profiteered off of this idea of labeling their political enemies and those who have differing opinions from them. And, you know, as you mentioned, they went after Dr. Ben Carson, you know, labeling him an extremist. And he's one of the sweetest, most soft-spoken individuals that there is, you know. And they went after Majid Nawaz and ended up having to pay more than $3 million to him. You know, they have been tied to domestic terrorism in the United States because of what happened at FRC. They're the ones who instigated the attack that was perpetrated against FRC that fortunately our wonderful Leo Johnson was able to prevent back in 2012. But the SPLC is the one that, you know, instigated that whole thing. That's where the information was found, lying about us and our position to get this man to try and come attack us. You know, they it's what they do.
Very quickly, the 11th Circuit Court has jurisdiction over Alabama, Florida, and Georgia, Alabama being the home of the Southern Poverty Law Center. What are the dangers of having an activist like Nancy Abadua deciding cases on the U.S. Circuit Court?
It's extremely dangerous. You know, as we've already discussed, most of the decisions she would be making would be the end of it. You know, there are very few, if any, would actually be taken to the Supreme Court. You know, so you would have this activist who has worked for this organization that's been so discredited and all of these things being a final arbiter of these decisions. And particularly as it relates to the voting rights issues, you know, as I mentioned, you had Georgia that implemented election integrity laws that she would try to strike down. And if she's the one who has the final say in that, you could see a greater election fraud in certain places if these laws to institute integrity are not allowed to stand.
So, Mary Beth, what are some action steps that our viewers and listeners can take?
They can go to frcaction.org/judge to let their senators know that they oppose Nancy Abudu. Let them know now. Her hearing could be within the next few weeks, so we want to start beating the drum now to get the word out there.
All right. Mary Beth Waddell, thanks so much for joining us. Great work on this.
Thanks for having me.
All right, folks, and I want to encourage you to do just that. Take action and contact your two senators and encourage them to oppose Nancy Abudu to this 11th Circuit Court of Appeals. Look, our republic, as I said, is not for spectators. It is for participants. You must be involved. Go to FRC Action or just go to TonyPerkins.com and follow the links over. All right, until next time, I leave you with the encouraging words the Apostle Paul found in Ephesians 6, where he says, when you've done everything you can do, when you've prayed, when you've prepared, when you've taken your stand, by all means, keep standing.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is brought to you by Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. Portions of the show discussing candidates are brought to you by Family Research Council Action. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.